This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. In the world of sculpture in the 1970s, large-scale industrial forms were the hot trend. But David Beck, a young artist in New York, bucked the trend by creating tiny, intricate sculptures. And for more than four decades, Beck has carved, sculpted, and painted miniature, playful creatures and scenes. A new film, Curious Worlds, The Art and Imagination of David Beck, takes us inside the magical world of this artist. The film debuts at the Full Frame Film Festival in Durham next week. Filmmaker Olympia Stone joins us now. Welcome back, Olympia.
Thanks so much for having me, Frank.
And as you all know from listening to this program for many, many years, Posey was also one of our producers many, many years ago. And so it's great to have you back. So tell us now, who is David Beck?
David Beck is the most amazing accomplished artist that nobody has ever heard of. He's very under the radar, and he now lives in San Francisco, and he works all the time. But one of the things that I think is so incredible about what he does is he incorporates so many different kinds of making into what he does. So he's a painter, he's a sculptor, he does build these sort of architectural structures. He makes them move, they're kinetic. So there's this mechanical, and I don't use the word genius lightly, but I really think he's a genius. He can just make things that are just magical, but they work on many, many levels.
Yeah, it's like industrial design meets graphic design meets sculpture. And then the art is in his imagination, the way he brings these scenes to life. Pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah, and he's very inspired by the idea of, I'm going to mispronounce this, but the Wunderkammer, the kind of curiosity cabinet. And the way that museums used to be categorized, where you would have drawers and drawers of every specimen. I mean, he kind of uses that idea a lot in his works. So there's a lot of drawers that open up with things inside them that he's all made, you know, little tiny starfish or, you know, jellyfish or whatever it is. But he makes everything. He does truly create worlds.
We should probably have you just describe a couple of them just to give us some idea. It's hard to do. And the film is beautiful because you go into great detail and we can see all of these amazing kind of nested eggs in the world of sculpture. But, you know, if you describe the opera for us, for instance, a piece that took, what, 6 years?
6 years to make. And he was commissioned to do it by a private collector. And the opera is, he knew nothing about opera when he started making the piece. He did incredible in-depth research, and that's what David does. He learns everything about the opera. And he carved for this piece over 200 tiny, tiny figures, and each one of them is from an opera. So there's a lot of Wagner's Ring Cycle, you know, in there. There's the Magic Flute. There's Pagliacci. And all of these characters move. And so there's the audience members, you know, watching the opera. And then on the stage, you know, Pagliacci, and there's an orchestra, and there's, you know, Egyptian pharaohs and elephants. And I mean, it's incredible. And there are curtains that open up and many different vantage points from which to look into this piece.
And the opera, the audience themselves are in opera regalia. They're all dressed up with horns and big giant costumes.
Yes.
Right?
And he says that he was inspired by these people in the Ring Cycle who are like groupies. You know, they're just obsessed with going to these operas and they dress like the characters. And he thought, you know, that was kind of a good entry point into thinking about these, who was going to be in the audience. And there's also, you know, the husband who's fallen asleep while his wife has dragged him to the opera, you know, so he's
periodically
snoring.
Yeah, nudges him with a little. It's amazing. And what you've done is given us insight into the many worlds, the many forms of imagination it takes, not only this insight into the groupie world of opera, how it works, what an opera looks like, insights into art itself, and then his own imagination, the ways in which he sees opera and these worlds all kind of coming together, all of that, and then the ingenuity of how he puts it together makes it work, right?
Right, and I think one of the things that's so incredible about David is that even from a very, very early age, and when he arrived at art school, because he is a formally trained artist, His classmates describe him as being fully formed. I mean, he already had a vision of a world. The way that this world is, and it's full of humor, there's a lot of victimization in his art. I mean, but it's not making fun of people. It's very human. It's very warm-hearted in a way. But the foibles of, you know, people and animals and, but anyway, all of that was sort of already in him. And I think that unique vision and the fact that he has stuck to that unique vision and really never wavered from it and created all these different kinds of objects is to me really inspiring.
Yeah, and we should pull apart what you just said, because a vision, and it's true, and it keeps, but the manifestations of that vision iterate themselves in many, many different ways. And so it's a vision in a way, but so many different forms, so many different types, and the unusual materials. I mean, we can listen to a clip now about his attempt at gathering mussel shells, for instance.
I was living in New York at the time in Soho when I was making this. I lived on Worcester Street, and there was a bar there called Finelli's, and it was a bar that, like most artists, hung out. I mean, you used to be able to get a draft for 50 cents. I could go at night with a bucket, and they would... They would give me all the mussel shells scraped off the plate, you know. And they said, and the guy, first they would wash them and give them to me, and it was fine. And then the guy goes, "What are you washing all those mussel shells for?" And he goes, "Well, David's coming by." And he goes, "Well, he can have them, but he's got to wash them himself." So I take these like mussel shells home in buckets. I had the spaghetti and tomato sauce. And it was really disgusting, you know. I mean, you can't really blame the guy.
There you go. From Curious Worlds, a film about artist David Beck. It screens at the Full Frame Festival in Durham next week and at River Run International Film Festival in late April. Olympia Stone is the filmmaker and with me today. Lots of forms, a lot of patience, and as you say, a great sense of humor. The guy's a very funny man.
He's hilarious. Yeah, and he has a very wry, dry sense of humor, and he's always cracking jokes. And really, there's so much humor in his work, which is one of the reasons it's so wonderful, because it you know, again, it has that. But the mussel shells that he was just talking about it's really incredible, because here's another example of, I mean, he took this very ordinary material, you know, and it was going to be trash at this restaurant. And he creates this incredible patina, becomes the surface of this bar that he was commissioned to make, which is an incredible thing in and of itself, and very sort of Gaudi-esque, the architect Gaudi. It has a lot of special techniques that he taught himself to use. So that's, I think, just amazing.
And as you said, he was fully formed. He did go to art school, but learned a lot when he came to New York. And he talked a lot about his mentor, who used unusual material to create art.
Yeah.
And The Starving Artist, he's in San Francisco now, but spent much of his career in New York. And I mean, the very model of The Starving Artist. Let's listen to another clip.
Very cold and drafty. And I remember Christmas morning, somebody came by and broke the windows out. So that was a drag, and snow was coming. And I was trying to, you know, it was pretty, sometimes it was grim, you know, it was really, because I didn't have the people come to visit, and they knew that I'd just turned the heat on just before they showed up, so it wouldn't look so bad. There were times that I don't like to admit it, but I was borrowing food from the stores, you know. I didn't like doing that.
He also was forced to move from time to time, which he actually credits for. Yeah, that's part of the reason he says he works in miniature. He can pack up and go pretty quickly, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Why do we know so little about him? I mean, his stuff doesn't show in museums. Why is it that we know so
little? Well, I mean, his stuff does. I mean, the Smithsonian American Art Museum is a huge supporter of his, and they've probably been his biggest supporter in terms of museum shows. But one of the complicated things about David's work is it's so it's fragile. It requires a trained docent to, when it's in a museum setting, to kind of open the drawers and show and turn the cranks and do all the things that his pieces do. And I think in a way, for me, you know, I grew up with his artwork in my house, and I had this incredible luxury of being able to explore his work in a really intimate way. I could open the doors of the, you know, the dodo bird that, you know, opened up and look inside and see something amazing. So I think one of the nice things about this film is that it can take people in a way to a place where you almost can't even get to in a museum because, you know, you need somebody there to kind of intervene for you. So it's hard to show his work. And I think he's working all the time. He's not interested in being in marketing himself. And in fact, he's shy. He's recalcitrant. I mean, you know, he did that. That's sort of the wrong word, but he's shy.
He's shy, but not as you can tell from the film. I mean, he certainly does have great sense of humor, which is to say he's engaging with you and all that. But we should talk more then about your relationship and how it came to be that you were able to play with these things. Your father, Alan Stone, who was the owner of the Alan Stone Gallery, very well-known gallery in New York, came to love his work and brought it into the house. And that's how you got to know both David and his work, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I think I met David when I was about 7 years old. A lot of my dad's artists would come and visit, you know, and hang out on the weekends. And David became sort of like an older adopted brother. You know, he was sort of like a family member. And so I, you know, and I truly did grow up in a house just I was incredibly fortunate, but it really was like a museum with tons of different kinds of artwork and, you know, abstract expressionist and pre-Columbian and whatever and lots of different things. And David's work really, to me, jumps out because it was the first thing that I remember just being so inspired by. I want to do what this guy does. And I used to sit in front of cartoons on Saturday mornings with little clay, you know, my little modeling clay, and try and recreate his creatures because I wanted to do that.
You actually did the first Wallace and Gromit. Very Cupid. I'm kidding.
Exactly.
But so that raises the question, what were the challenges for you in doing a film like this, given how close you were to David?
Well, I would say, you know, I'm never going to pretend that I'm an objective observer ever. You know, I'm not. I think he's amazing. I think more people should know about him. And that for me was a huge motivator in making the film. I think because I have that friendship and that, you know, long relationship with him, I have access to things that I don't think he would probably show most people walking in off the street. You know, not that he's, and I don't want to make him sound like he's a hermit or, you know, I mean, he's a very well-adjusted person with lots of friends and everything, but he does work all the time and he's very private about his studio and his space and, you know, guarding his sort of work environment. And I think that that for me was mostly an advantage. On the other, and you know, there were places that I knew we weren't going to go in this film, but I feel like the real point of making a film like this is to, you know, make art accessible to people that wouldn't otherwise normally see it. And I feel like it's an important thing to do, and especially for somebody like this, who I really feel like is special and people should know about him.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is that as you say, people recognized it early on. He went to he did go to school, Carnegie Mellon, and was clearly, they could see, distinguished from the rest of his students. I want to play this clip when he talks about his experience in school.
This is your self-portrait. I said, well, yes. Yeah. And in fact, that's part of me right there. This is a portrait of me as a cow on this part right here. But the whole thing is. And he goes, and he liked it. He liked my drawing. He says, okay, just wait right here. And so then he had the rest of the class. He explained, well, we're going to have a model. And when everybody's set up on the model and, you know, this is what we're going to do. And he comes back to me and he goes, David, now, you can draw from the model if you like, but you don't have to. You can set up a little studio back here and do whatever you want. He told me, like, he said he didn't want to, like, change me. He didn't want to force me into different, you know. He thought that I had a different kind of vision that should be encouraged.
So tell us more about that. What was the lead up to that particular piece?
Well, I think that exemplifies his vision that, you know, that he had his entire life. And, Yeah, and it's great when you see this thing. It's like only David Beck would draw. It's a big drawing of color and things like that. And there is this cow's udder, this cow
corner. This is my fault because I forgot to set it up. This was supposed to be a self-portrait. The assignment was self-portrait. This thing with his face is with color.
Yeah, and he was kind of saying how, and it's art school and everybody's making portraits, like naked self-portraits. And it's really, it's really heavy. And like his take on it is, I'm going to draw myself as a cow. I think so much like David, his sense of humor.
We are exploring the curious worlds of David Beck today on The State of Things. My guest is Olympia Stone. She's the filmmaker. Her film screens at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham. So this, you've done a film about your father, now David. You did another film about an artist who is working in a very peculiar medium. And in exploring this kind of creativity, the way you have now, and you're sort of building a kind of an opus and a reputation. What are you learning now about this kind of creativity, the way in which this creativity can manifest itself in the world of art? It's unique, and yet it is fundamentally what artists should be about.
Yeah, I think that, a couple of things I would say about that is, one, these people are not out to make money. It's not about making money, It just isn't. It's the farthest thing from their mind. These are not things that are made for the marketplace, And they do appeal to a very select few people. So that's part of it. It's just something that I think is in that artist. I think a lot of artists feel this way. They just have to make what they have to make. And that to me is what's interesting, is what is that, that just that obsession, that drive to do this thing. And even David would, just laugh at himself like, this is crazy. I spend 3 hours working on this little tiny, welding this little, metal piece that's going to be one of 100 other little metal pieces in this dragonfly that's going to move. And it's all trial and error, and 3 hours and it didn't work. And I'm going to start on the next one. I mean, it's incredible to think of the things that people do just because it's in them. They can't not do it. I find that amazing.
He does have an outlet, many outlets, but one of them is music. He took up the saxophone, right?
That's right. And he says he did it because his life, in a way, is so solitary with what he does. And music helped kind of draw him out and is like another language, is like communicating with people in another way. And he has a group that he plays with, the Melancholics, which I love. So perfect for David. And he plays the saxophone, which is also the perfect instrument for him. He really pursues that. He's not, he plays a lot.
And we didn't even talk about his obsession with dodo birds.
No, and the dodo is that's been his muse and his inspiration for many years. For as long as I've known him.
Well, if you want to see more about that, you'll have to see the film itself. But in the meantime, Olympia, thanks so much.
Good to see you again.
Thank
you, Frank. It's great to be here.
Curious Worlds is a film about artist David Beck. It premieres at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham on April 10th. It screens at River Run International Film Festival in Winston-Salem on the 21st and the 23rd. And since you couldn't remember all that, I would recommend you go to our website, stateofthings.org, and you'll find links to the trailer and to the dates. All of that will be there. Filmmaker Olympia Stone is the one who made that film, and that film, as I say, screens at Full Frame a little later next month. Is this still March? This is still March. So it's going to be in April, and that's next month. Just ahead, how Native Americans are using digital media to counter stereotypes. Stay with us.